Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show for June 1st, 2014, with Richard, Talk to Me Guy, and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. It's good to be back.
And I know you're talking about just being back from the you know, excitement of conference.
Absolutely. We have a few announcements. We'll talk about conference just a little bit, but we have some announcements. We're certainly happy that people are with us. This is one of three shows that we do on a two-week rotation. We're trying to reach enlightened people from all around the world. There's a very special message that you won't hear anyplace else. We try to bring you special messages. And hopefully, Richard, have you ever heard of another show that delivers the kind of things that we do? I mean, you're on a lot of shows. You produce a lot of shows over the years.
I'm trying to say, there's a lot of people that talk about things, and there's a lot of people who may try and test or analyze or explain things. Voices, you know, well, in your case, it's, you know, in this instance, it's voices. But I don't think I can't think of anybody that puts the two together like we do, where we talk about things, we talk about, I can't help it, stupid politicians, in my opinion, or issues where people are talking, and they're, you know, then you do a vocal print, and we get to look at what their underlying story, or if they're telling the truth, or what areas they're weak in. So I don't know of any other show where the two are put together. Validation and information at the same time. I think that's the power of what we do.
Whistleblowers with truth behind them. Most of that we have shifted to Direction for Truth, which is going to be on Tuesday evening. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. Richard, I think one of the things that makes our show so special is that we have a great audience, a great and supportive audience. And so I see some people who have been here before we're talking about a similar kind of subject, and they still show up because they love to chat with their friends on the broadcast. We do have two broadcasts as we are, two chats as we broadcast simultaneously, one on Blog Talk Radio. You can tune in there at 347-850-1407. If you have a question, you just push the little 1, and Richard will bring you on the air. That's 347-850-1407. And if you want to join us and watch the show, then you can go to our site, soundhealthoptions.com, go to radio, and this is Blog Talk Radio. There's three different choices there. And there's a link so that you can watch the show. Right now we're looking at that link. But there's lots of other stuff there, too, from the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology, our sponsor. We are the largest 501c3 nonprofit alternative research center in Ohio. We stick a microphone in front of us. I was trying to see if we had anybody new on here, but we have a list of people who are listening. We have a great archive audience, I guess, that's what you'd call them, because they go into our site, thesoundhealthoptions.com, and the lower left-hand corner of the home page is all of our shows, and so you can listen to them whenever you want. There's bunches of classes on there that are free that people go listen to. So we're going to have a few announcements, and we're going to bring on our very special guest about a touchy, touchy subject. I don't know if I want to say more about that yet, but it's a subject that people are afraid of, and our guest is going to make it easier for all of us. So like I said, on Tuesday, Directions for Truth, that is Reading Between the Lies. I don't know if it's up here yet. I'm looking to see if it's been posted. Yes, Reading Between the Lies. All the current events that are taking place, we're going to take you back to look at those and see if you're interested in who's telling the truth. I did a very large evaluation of Edward Snowden and what he was saying about what our government is really doing, and I want to know if he's telling the truth. So we'll see about that. Richard, do you have any announcements?
I can talk. I'll toss out a tidbit on fracking just because it's a word I like to say as much as possible. I see a tiny ray of light, or maybe a little tiny light at the end of the tunnel. Well, there's no tunnel yet. Anyway, in Santa Cruz, which is a town on the west coast in the Monterey County, Santa Cruz County is trying to get a bill passed to ban fracking in their town, in their area, which is quite a large area. And it's really impactful in that area because we, in this part of California, well, most of California at this point, are already in drought conditions because we didn't have enough rain this winter. So they're trying to protect what water table they have. So they're actually trying to just ban fracking, just saying, okay, no, we've, no. You know, kind of like, what part of no don't you understand? And I think that's very exciting when a town can, you know, get that organized and start getting a bill passed. And I think we'll do a show in the not-too-distant future with Tia Lebhertz of the Food and Water Watch talking about that very issue, about getting towns to, like, going, no, we don't want fracking here. Go away.
I would love it. There are so many more earthquakes and tornadoes and strange things going on about Mother Earth and what's going down. And really, literally, streets are falling down. And houses are being swallowed because all of this garbage that's going on, with just really disturbing the skeleton of Mother Earth. And it seems to me like taking out all of her fluids, and she's just not real happy with that. Okay, I have a few announcements. We're having another two-day class next week. Well, I guess this week is Sunday's the beginning of the week or the end, but it's on Thursday and Friday. It's going to be about allergies and fatigue. We've decided to offer it free this month, but people can pay for it if they want. It's $1,200, and it includes the software and the course materials and the textbooks and all that. It's our attempt to establish bioacoustic centers around the world. So seating is limited to, I think, 100 people. For this one, but that's going to include people from all over the world, and it's online, or you can come to the center here in Ohio and be in the classroom if you find out there's no room online. Lots of people are advertising it for us because they feel so that this is so important. Rumor Mill News put up a big flyer for us, so I think that is great. We just finished this wonderful five-day conference that Richard was talking about and had bioacoustic professionals come in from everywhere. 5 days, intense, exciting, new stuff. Special thanks to co-host Richard for filling in and doing the shows alone. From what I hear, you did a great job. I haven't had time to go back and listen. I can barely catch up with what I need just to kick my way through my house. So lots of people here and lots of activities. And we had activities from like 8 in the morning until sometimes midnight, a casino. We premiered a film. You know, the crew was really wonderful. The staff and crew, I should send out a special thanks to them because they accommodated nearly 50 guests for 5 days while simultaneously keeping up with their other duties. I think that's phenomenal. Yes, a few things fell through the cracks, but it was an exciting event. One of the most exciting ones was the one you were talking about, how to look at the body as it metabolizes food, not diet. I shouldn't have said food, as it metabolizes its energy patterns. Not food, not diet, not exercise. We stumbled upon a matrix that shows how carbohydrates and your pH balance is really the issue of weight, and weight starts when you get very alkaline. Weight starts piling on. We also premiered a new documentary. Those pictures will be up on the site probably Monday. We just got them from the photographer. We looked at The Business of Disease by Sonia Barrett and Dream Spell. I was very honored to be in the film. It was about champions of justice when it comes to health care. I went as Yoda, one of my champions of wisdom and truth. We had the sorting hat there from Harry Potter fame. You remember the sorting hat, Richard?
It's vague. I'm sorry to say. I remember, but I don't remember it well.
Well, all the students came in, and they had to put this hat on, and then they were given special assignments and tests based on what was really going on in their head. It was kind of the way to find out the best you could be. We had a Knights Templar there, a judge. I keep wanting to say Peter Pan because she looked so cute and looked like Peter Pan, but it was Robin Hood. We had everybody that we could think of, champions of the people, sort of that would help. Although I'm not so sure about the law and policemen anymore. I've seen some of these new laws that are coming through that we're going to talk about that just really are not for the people. They now have put a designation, I guess you could call it, in this big book that doctors bill by, and I don't remember its name, but if you have the mindset that to be a domestic terrorist or to be against the government, there now is a designation for you as a very mentally sick person. You're probably just chomping at the bit at that.
Yep. That's it. It'll be a whole other show.
I have put up on the WebEx some of the things that people are sending to me, some of the sayings, I guess you could say, because I've talked about Yoda on another show and these sayings from these very strong people. Mine about Yoda, my favorite one, is learn to do without those things you fear to lose. And you'd be surprised at how many people live from fear. Don't judge yourself by your past. You don't live there anymore. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. That's another Yoda. But they're on the screen for those of you who are watching the show. And we will, questions came in, we will reschedule the class I missed on Tuesday from weather and being worn out, not being able to travel. And it was appropriately called Are You Frazzled? So we'll be doing that on June 10th. I'm going to hurry up and read the keynote unless you want to, Richard.
No, please. I always like the things that you add into the keynote.
Did you read it?
I did, and it's always so amazing. The keynote is an energy that's or a frequency or a note in Sherry's case that is monitored by various agencies like NASA and other agencies with acronyms. And Sherry is one of the few that I know of that actually put some information out about it. I think the others are just trying to figure out what to do with it. And Sherry's software gives this thing called the keynote, which is an emanence from the cosmos that lasts about 5 to 7 days. And it always seems to line up it makes me laugh every week because it always is, you know, keying right in. I don't hear about the keynote until this morning. And it always is like the day before or a few days following, people are calling me and talking to me about issues, and it somehow always keys in with the keynote. So the keynote is, it's always an amazing thing. So please, yes, the keynote.
Well, I'd like to read the little saying that we put up with this, usually some game or brain teaser. But this is a series that we did for the conference about the body green. The brain operates on the same amount of power as a 10-watt light bulb. The cartoon image of a light bulb over your head when a great thought occurs isn't too far off the mark. The brain generates as much energy as a small light bulb, even when you're sleeping. So I thought, here's these comics that have been putting that in the newspaper for years, and they've measured it, and it really is true. I've been reading this big magazine article on National Geographic about the brain. Richard, this one will flip you out. The brain, they've mapped it, and it's a matrix of little areas, much like a Rubik's Cube. And certain frequencies dominate those little cubes, and inside there's a whole other pattern that's a secondary pattern inside each little cube in the brain. So we've been saying it for years. The brain is a math matrix. And this guy who was mapping it, boy, I can't remember his name, but we'll be doing a show about it, says that that's absolutely true. So I'm going to read a little bit about that because it comes up this week. Keynote for June 3rd, 2014, and I have entitled it Feeding the Brain Food for Thought. The frequency coming to the earth can be translated into the note of D in our musical scale, and for our astrological friends, it is the sign of Gemini. And I really think how these things, these frequencies came to earth, I think that's how astrology started. And this is just a modern upgrade. Somebody ought to take this and put it into a column someplace so that people could read this every week. We should work on that. If anybody has an idea of where they'd like to see this, I think it is incredibly accurate, as Richard says. Okay, feeding the brain and body is the frequency pattern of the next few days as we approach the beginning of summer for the Northern Hemisphere. Other nutrients that are active, acetylcholine, a B vitamin family, is incredibly important and supportive for the brain function. That'll be active for probably the next 10 days or so. It also supports eye function. Now, that goes right along with the folic acid that was active a couple weeks ago when people were complaining of headaches and their eyes being very, very sensitive to light. So this helps protect the eyes from harsh sunlight, excessive light glare. So if you're feeling that, then you probably have some choline and stress. It is available from eggs, milk, organ meats, whole wheat products. Progesterone, a natural hormone, helps support acetylcholine. You'll hear more about that in a minute. Acetylcholine also acts as a protective neurotransmitter, which is important right now because there's an Alzheimer's gene coming into play probably Monday evening. Glutamine, an amino acid that's from a family of glutamic acid, glutathione, and GAM, supports the body's use of its resources so that energy and muscle communication remains active. Glutamine sources includes eggs, beef, chicken, other dairy and meat products. If your muscles are not responding quickly or seem stiff and uncooperative when you're sitting down, getting up, or trying to move, or even in the morning if your ankles are stiff, you might want to consider glutamine supplementation. Now, I say that for our vegetarian friends because most of what I read that it's from, they are animal products. Alpha-ketoglutaric acid, a support for the energy cycle of the body, is from that same family and is available from your local food store. There's a good product called Krebs, K-R-E-B-S, Krebs Cycle. It has a lot of magnesium and potassium and other things that support the energy cycle, which needs B3 to make it all work. And that was in stress a couple of weeks ago. When you watch this and watch this whole system, it's almost like gestation. Here's where you start, and this builds and builds and builds. Or it's also like the crop cycles that happen. You get the bed ready, you plant the seed, you tender it. It's amazing how all this comes together. Here's one I didn't know. This one surprised me. Herpes simplex 1, that cold sore stuff, is active now, but lysine, an amino acid that they say is a cure with lysine salve, or just take lysine, that all comes into play like Tuesday of next week, and they're both the same frequency. And I think the idea is if you have enough lysine, then the herpes simplex is thrown out by the body. But if not, the body thinks that it needs to keep the herpes simplex because it's the same frequency as lysine, and so that's where the cold sore develops. I thought that was an ingenious thing that Mother Nature put together. Human papilloma is still going to be in effect for the next 7 to 10 days, so watch that. That's cervical warts, so it might be an outbreak. You know, I should look up what nutrient is opposite that. I think it's progesterone. We did a graph. We had a graph in here last week that had antidotes to that, so I should have left it up. Muscles in stress, the chin, little finger, and the muscles which attach the chin to the chest, the platysma, are all active now. Note that the platysma is associated with a double chin and a lack of progesterone, which circles back and is part of the acetylcholine. That's a lot going on. Richard, would you introduce our guest?
I would be thrilled. I think this is a fascinating and under-discussed subject, so I am delighted to say that we have with us Judy Flickinger. And Judy was a hospice nurse for the last 12 years of her 42-year professional life as a registered nurse. During this time, she recognized that a healthy spirit could make the difference between a miserable death and a positive, meaningful end-of-life experience for both the patients and their loved ones. Judy wrote Spirit Matters, How to Remain Fully Alive with a Life-Limiting Illness, to pass on what she has learned. Judy's here to talk with us about how she saw firsthand the unnecessary suffering, not only with the patients, but also with their loved ones. Welcome, Judy.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I have to ask right out of the gate, in your career, in your lengthy career, I put that in air quotes, as a nurse, what led you to choose to go into hospice care?
Well, I'll try to make this short, but it was very profound for me. I was working on a medical surgical nursing unit at a hospital. And I had a dear little lady that was in her 90s that I had become very fond of, and I took care of her for quite a while. And she used to talk to me and say, Judy, you know, if something happens to me while I'm here, and please don't let them pound on my body. I'm ready to go. I really am. And she said, I just don't want any extraordinary measures. I don't want to be put in a nursing home, and I don't want feeding tube. I don't want to be hooked up to machinery. So please don't let them do that. So that became, I mean, I was like her guardian angel. That was not going to happen to her. Well, I talked to her physician for quite a while, and he said, Judy, she's not terminally ill at this point, and if she stops breathing, we're going to do CPR on her. And I tried to talk him into getting a do not resuscitate order, but he wouldn't write it. And as it so happens, I was working the day that she stopped breathing. And someone yelled, get the crash cart, which in the hospital means someone has died. Let's try to revive them. And the action begins. The respiratory therapist comes running, the physicians, the interns, the residents, the nurses, were all around her body, and I ran down and got the crash cart, which is all those life-saving drugs, and wheeled it into her room. And as I walked into her room, there was her little naked body on the bed on a board, and people were pounding on her, and the door wasn't even closed. And my heart was broken. And I was a part of that, and I thought, I can't do this anymore. I won't do this anymore. So I can remember I cried all the way home from work that day. And I walked in and I said, I'm not doing this anymore. And, I mean, I was helping to support my family. I needed a job. And one of my girlfriends was a hospice nurse. And I had talked to her many times. And she said to me, Judy, you really belong in hospice. That's where your heart is. So I got on the phone and called her. And I eventually had an interview. And I started doing hospice in 1989. And even though I retired after 12 years as a nurse in hospice, it was 25 years ago when my experience started. And I still volunteer to this day because I so believe in the hospice philosophy. And, you know, when you and Sherry were talking about Champion in your segment before I got on, I thought, you know, that's what I am. I am a champion of the terminally ill and their loved ones. I know a lot, and I want to share that with people. That's what I wrote my book for. And I'm out speaking all over the place, on radio shows. I've been on TV. I'm just so passionate about this subject because people are suffering out there. And the reason the medical community gets away with it is because we bury all those mistakes and nothing's done about it. So I'm trying on my quest to change how we die and to make it a more meaningful, loving, comfortable experience for people. So that's my story.
That's your short answer, which is a great answer. Go ahead, Sherry.
Well, she said we literally bury the mistakes, and that's funny, but it's not all at the same time. And I think that's one of the things that people said about Judy's book, that it makes you comfortable, it makes you laugh, it makes you cry. For our readers, Judy, what's the most important issues we need to think about, deal with, know about death and dying?
Well, there are several things. Number one, physicians have not been trained on end-of-life care. They're taught how to cure. And if your condition is curable, that's wonderful. But we're all going to die. Life's terminal, Sherry. I did an interview, a two-hour interview out of California on a physician's radio show last week. And she was amazed. She said, Judy, I didn't know this. I didn't know any of this. She said, I'm a physician. Why don't I know this? And I said, because you weren't given the training. She said, I just finished medical school in the 1990s. They didn't teach me any of this. And I said, very true. I mean, there are some physicians that have taken it on their own to learn some of these things. But most physicians are just too busy curing people. So people need to know that their physician probably doesn't know. So the question I ask for people to use when they speak to their physician if they or their loved one is experiencing a life-limiting illness, don't say to the physician, is it time for hospice? Because most physicians do not know when it's time for hospice because they haven't been trained. The question you should ask your physician is, would you be surprised if I or my loved one, whoever's the ill person, would die in the next 6 months? And the physician says, no, I wouldn't be surprised. Then I'm here to tell you, it's time for hospice. I've been doing this work for 25 years, and it hasn't changed in those 25 years. people are not getting on hospice early enough. We bring too many people on those last hours or days, and I don't even call that hospice. I call that crisis management. So people need to have that question for the physician. Would you be surprised? And it can be for any end-stage disease, not only cancer, but end-stage heart disease, lung disease, liver, the dementias, neuromuscular diseases. They all fit under hospice's umbrella when the condition is terminal. People don't know, Sherry, I had patients that were out traveling, hospice patients, that went back to work. You help these people feel better, and very often they do better, and they get back in their lives. I have wonderful stories in my book of patients that I had experience with, that what the revival was, once they got into hospice early enough, was totally amazing, because we helped them feel better, and they did better. The New England Journal of Medicine did a study a couple years ago, and that's the prestige journal for medicine. And it said a cancer patient, when given hospice care instead of curative care, when their life is limited, will live an average of 3 months longer than if they stayed on the chemotherapies and the radiation. People don't know that. And I'm sure they spent millions of dollars for that study. And all they had to do was ask me, Sherry. I wouldn't have cost them a penny. I saw with my own eyes, and I still see it, if a person gets on early enough, they go back to living their life because they feel better. We know how to manage end-of-life care, the pain that goes with that, better than anyone I know. We know what works and what doesn't work because we've seen it for years and years. But the most important aspect of this for me, and this is why I wrote my book, when I started doing hospice all those years ago, I recognized something that no one else was talking about, and it was right in front of my eyes. And it was the importance of the human spirit, who we are as a person inside of us. Most people that come into hospice, they're beaten down, they're worn out, they're suffering from symptoms related to the terminal illness. Their families are worn out. They might be devastated financially because of this process they've gone through in an attempt to cure their body, and their spirit has been depleted, sometimes nearly destroyed. So my practice became centered around reviving that spirit. That was my goal. And I saw wonderful things happen, not only in the patient's life, but in the family's life. So I started teaching classes about this. I was in Cleveland, Ohio at the time, and I started teaching at the local colleges. I taught at Cleveland State University, and I wrote articles for newspapers, anywhere anyone would listen, about the importance of the human spirit. And then I got ready to retire and move to Florida. And I had all this good information that I had been teaching about. And I said to my husband while we were packing up for our move, I have all this good stuff. And I said, I don't just want to throw it away because still no one was talking about it. And he said, well, honey, why don't you put it together in a book? And I said, well, I'm not a very good writer. And lovingly he said, you know, you're right about that. You're not a very good writer. But he is. So we worked so hard to get this little book together. it's almost like one of our children, because it was a labor of love. It was very, very difficult. And it was very difficult to get a publisher. But I tend to be very tenacious, and I finally got a publisher. And the response has been far better than my dreams would ever dream. I moved to a senior area in Florida. It's called The Villages, and we have over 110,000 of us in my little community. And I believe I was put here for a purpose, because I can't keep the book in. We're all at the age where we need to hear this. Nobody wants to talk about it, but we need to hear it, because we're caught up in a system that doesn't know when to stop and doesn't know, you know, they destroy your spirit in their quest. So people are sending this to their children, their adult children, and saying, read this, because I want you to know what I want at the end of my life. So it's been wonderful.
There's questions coming in from the chat and a series based on one theme. They want to know more about the difference here with cancer therapy. And I will agree with you totally about this. Several of the doctors who've come to us have been oncologists that say, I think that's the cancer doctor, who say, we're just killing people. We want to do something better. So suggestion for your next book, this idea of, I guess, medical care or cancer therapy killing us, and how to move away from that to a better care, something like you would be doing with people in the hospice and feeding their spirit. So there's your next book, Judy.
Oh, I don't think I'm going to live long enough to write the next book. And I really don't feel that I'm an expert on cancer treatments. I do know that chemotherapy is a chemical, and many of my patients died from the treatment and not the cancer, although the cancer was certainly there. Many people die before they, well, just like the New England Journal of Medicine said, when you're facing the end of a life situation and you get rid of those chemicals and you get your spirit nurtured and you get back in your life, it gives you a will. I mean, we all have a will to live. Do you have time for a quick story?
Absolutely.
And I have film, I'm full of stories, but this one just happened recently. A friend of mine here in the Villages called me one morning, and she said, Judy, I know a lady that I just met a lady, and she really would like to speak to you. She said, we were talking about your book. And I said, well, okay. She said, do you mind if with three of us meet for lunch someday? And I said, no, I like that. So we went over to my friend's house for lunch, and I walked in, and the woman looked at me after our introductions, and she had tears in her eyes, and she said, I just had to meet you in person to thank you and to tell you my story. So we sat down, and we had a glass of iced tea, and she said, 3 months before Christmas last year, my husband was getting chemotherapy treatments for his cancer. And she said, it was devastating. She said he spent most of the time with his head in the toilet throwing up. He was so weak. She said the one thing we moved here for was the golf. She said he loves to play golf. Well, we have over 30 golf courses here that all the villagers can play on. And she said he couldn't even play golf anymore. She said he was dying of a broken heart as well as cancer. And she said, someone gave him your book. And she said, he was sitting there reading it, and he said to me, his wife, he said, you got to hear what this lady has to say. So they read it together. And she said, Judy, he looked at me, and he said, that's it. I'm not doing this treatment anymore. I want to feel better. So he stopped his chemotherapy. much to his physician's chagrin. And he started feeling better. He started eating better because he wasn't so sick at his stomach all the time. And he started getting his energy back, and he went back to playing golf with his friends. She said for 3 months, Judy, he played golf 3 or 4 times a week and went out with his buddies. And she said, we went out with our friends to dinner and to the movie and to the plays. She said it was the most wonderful 3 months. She said Christmas came, and our kids came down from the north with their families. She said Christmas Eve was absolutely wonderful. It's probably the best Christmas we've ever had together. And she said he was right in there with them. 3 days after his kids left, he died. And she said, Judy, I just want to thank you for giving me back my husband for those 3 months, for giving the kids back their dad for Christmas, and for giving my husband back his life, because that's the life he loved. So I'm hearing these stories over and over again. You can imagine what that does for my spirit and the lifeblood I put into this little book that only cost $13 has just been such a reward for me. I mean, I'm not going to make a lot of money on this book, and I didn't write it to make the money. I read it because I'm a champion of the terminally ill. And so, you know, I will share this message with anyone. When I go out to speak, and I do a lot of speaking engagements, I don't charge for it because it's my passion to educate, inspire, and to empower people to take control of a situation that very often becomes uncontrollable. You have to maintain control or your spirit will be depleted. That's my message.
I love this. How to remain fully active with a life-limiting illness. Okay, Richard, I'll shut up.
That's good. No, that's absolutely true. Why do you think, in all of your years, why is hospice so hidden? Or why don't people know about hospice, do you think? Is it because we're really afraid of talking about dying?
Of course.
Or what is it? You know, I did work. I'll give a brief note. I had a national mail order catalog at an herb store in the late 70s, early 80s. And I did work with the local hospice with, you know, various kinds of boluses. And I had a nurse that was the head of the local hospice who wanted to try some, you know, other protocols for people, because back then mostly it was just toxins and drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent time with her, and I spent time at hospice doing work with people, for, you know, basically visiting, and seeing what an amazing and caring and completely different environment that it is being in a healthcare facility. That it's just so shocking to me that years later I'm hearing you talk about people still not knowing about hospice. I just am mystified by that. Is it just the fear of, well, not just, but I mean, is it our fear of talking about dying that keeps hospice sort of hidden away?
Absolutely.
Okay.
People don't want to talk about this. And when they don't talk about it, horrible things can happen. People don't realize 90% of us, Richard, will die of a chronic lingering illness. Any of those illnesses that I mentioned, 90% of us. Only 10% of us die very quickly from an accident or a major heart attack. Another 90% of us, that's a heck of a lot of people that could experience a heck of a lot of suffering. And another thing that people don't realize, see, death just takes a moment. You breathe out and you don't breathe in. That's death. But dying, that can take a very long time. Days, months, weeks, or even years. And how you spend that time, what I call the dying time, that's what matters to your spirit. So if you can keep your spirit alive during that time, you're going to have such a better death than if you allow it to become depleted by a system that doesn't know when to stop. And what we're seeing in hospice now that is just breaking my heart, because of what's happening in our healthcare system now, physicians, their reimbursement is being cut quite a bit. Some of them are getting out of their practice because they can't. I mean, it's an expensive thing to run a physician's office. And they're stopping doing it because they can't afford to do it with their reimbursement being cut. So one of the things we're seeing in hospice now, physicians are even keeping patients in treatment longer. Because once a patient becomes a hospice patient, those physicians don't make that money. And what a travesty. What a travesty that our people that are terminally ill aren't being cared for well. See, when you're dying, you don't need a lot. I mean, you don't need to be in a hospital hooked up to machinery. You don't need to be in an ICU. You don't need a lot. But what you need really, really badly. You need to be where you want to be. For me, I want to be home. And if I can't be home, if there's no one to help take care of me, and I can't take care of myself any longer, then my next choice would be in a hospice house. But most hospice is done in people's homes. But we have wonderful hospice facilities for people that can't remain at home any longer. And they're absolutely gorgeous. They're beautiful. The care there is excellent. If I can't be in one of those, then I probably would like to be on a hospice unit in the hospital. Because if you are on a designated hospice unit in the hospital, they can't be doing things to you. The only thing you're going to have done to you is the loving care of hospice and have your symptoms managed. I mean, nothing will destroy the spirit quicker than uncontrolled pain. And yet, I mean, I have a whole chapter in my book about pain, end-of-life pain. People don't have to be in pain. And yet we saw people all the time coming into hospice that were in severe pain. And so the first thing I would have to do is get together with my hospice medical director, a physician, and put together a plan to help them get rid of that pain. It's devastating. And who should die in pain? You have to
well,
be
who clean. Who should die in, you know, I was in a, now almost 2 years ago, I was in a healthcare facility for about a year because I had over 30 hours of surgeries. And I was in between the surgeries. I was ambulatory. I was walking. I was up and moving around. And it was a large facility. It was 250 beds, three people to a room. It was not a high-end facility. It was just a, you know, regular people facility. And in that time, because I walked around the facility a lot, I talked or interacted with a lot of people. And in that time, I probably talked with or met or in some way was around probably about, I'll underestimate by saying over 12 people who died, more than that. Because I, in my room alone, I had six people die that were my roommates.
Wow.
And I saw how these people, and I, as I said, I already had this experience in the 80s with hospice. So I watched these people in this facility be just, and it wasn't because of the staff being mean or bad or treating people badly. I do not want to give that impression that the healthcare practitioners were mean or bad. However, there was that exactly what you're talking about, that thing of somebody is obviously moving toward the exit, toward dying. And the healthcare facilities don't seem to, well, in this case, they didn't probably want to give them up. Even if they were pro-hospice, they would lose the income from that person because it is a business. They would lose the income if that person went to hospice. And yet, of the six people that died in my room, at least four of them, well, all of them could have been in hospice and would have had a much better experience for themselves, for their family members, because when you have people, I had dear friends who had a very hard time visiting me in this facility because it was so overwhelming, just the machinery of it, the overwhelm of being around people who are either dying or sick or ill or in discomfort or, you know, in dementia and who are shouting and screaming and angry and just, I mean, everything imaginable.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I saw so many instances where I thought, why isn't this person in hospice where their family members could be visiting them in an environment where they'd be much more comfortable, they'd be taken out of that cycle of, I can't think of another phrase, and I'm sorry I'm using this, but I can't help it, where at some point their bodies are being beaten almost to death.
That's exactly what happened. Exactly.
You know, where they're just, and it's not because the practitioners are mean or bad, they just don't seem to know that there's another option. And the patients,
right.
I mean, the caretakers or the loved ones are in overwhelm, they're in shock, they're in trauma. They don't know how to say, no, let's stop now, because they're so traumatized themselves. Nobody's, you know, and that's where hospice is so perfect to me, because they know how to help people be comfortable. I don't think I had a statement there. I think I was just ranting for a minute. Please.
That's all right, because it's very true. Couple of thoughts on that. Number one, hospice is free. It won't cost you a cent. Medicare, Medicaid, and private insurance covers hospice. The only thing that could possibly cost you money is if you did have to go into a hospice house. That particular, your room and board there is not covered. But most hospice houses, they work on a sliding scale. So it's, you know, how much can you afford? But your hospice is still your care and all things associated with your care. It's already, you've already paid for it. You'd never get a bill. The other thing that I wanted to bring up that crossed my mind, the importance, Richard, of if you have a young audience and they have parents or grandparents still alive, it's so important to have the conversation as a family about what you, your mom, your dad, your grandma, your grandpa, what they want for their end-of-life care. I call it as important as most people today have a living will and a durable power of attorney for health care. Those are two documents that the federal government recognizes. The states have their own regulations, so it varies a tiny bit from state to state. But it's a federal program as such. But to me, just as important is sitting down and having the conversation. When I was so involved in hospice, we always called it the kid from California syndrome. There'd be one son or daughter in the family, and they could have been living next door, but we called it kid from California syndrome. They would come into the picture when their mom or dad or whatever were dying, and they would want all treatment to continue as long as possible. Whether the treatment was killing them or not, they wanted it to continue. I mean, put IVs in, put feeding tubes in, do the whole gamut, keep the chemo going. Those sick family members had not had the conversation because nobody wants to talk about it. Now, I have three children from a former marriage, and before I moved to Florida, I had them all come home with their spouses and their kids to our home in Cleveland for our last Christmas up north together. And I said to my eldest, David, who was married and had children, David, I want you to get your brother and your sister and go sit down. I want to have a conversation with you. Now, I have been trying to have this with David for a long time because I've been in hospice forever. And it's very important to me. And he looked at me and he rolled his eyes and he said, Mom, it's Christmas. You're not going to do this to us now. He knew what I wanted to say. And he knew it wasn't going to be about birth control because they all had kids. So he knew it was going to be about this subject. David doesn't talk about his mom dying, especially because after their dad left us, I was a single mom all through their teenage years. And, I was their rock. He didn't want to ever talk about his mom dying. But I'm getting older. And I said, I'm telling you, David, go sit down with your brother and sister. We are going to have this talk, whether you want it or not. I said, David, this isn't about you, honey. This is about me. This is very important to me. So he breathed a sigh, and he went and got his brother and sister with their spouses, and they all sat down. And I said, I want to have a conversation because I want you all to know what I want when my end of life comes. I want to be comfortable. I don't want to be in pain. I don't want to be in a hospital with a hospital gown on with my back end exposed. I want to be in a pretty nightie. I want someone combing my hair and brushing my teeth and putting a pretty nightie on me and put some blush on me, whatever will it take to make me look like me. I want all three of you kids to be there. And if you're crying, that's okay, because it'll be a sad time for you, but that's okay. I had a hard time raising you three kids. And if you're crying, I probably deserve it, because it was tough being a mom by myself. And I said, and if you give, I'm now married 30 years to my present husband, and my kids adore him. And as I said, if you give my husband any problems about this, because he knows what I want, I will come back and haunt you. Don't do that to him, because in your quest to keep me alive, I looked at them and I said, we're all going to die. Let me die the way I want to, not the way you want me to. And one of my other son's wives spoke up. She's an oncology nurse. And she said, David, you don't know what a gift your mother has just given you. She said, families get in arguments all the time on the cancer unit at the hospital. One kid wants one thing and the other kid wants another thing. And she said, number one, who's the physician going to listen to with all the lawsuits? They're going to listen to the one that wants the treatment to continue. Your mom's very smart to be telling you this now, because, David, she's seen a lot, and she knows what will make her a happy dying person, if there is such a thing. And he just looked at me, shook his head, and we've had a conversation since then. And I think he's very happy that he doesn't have to have that burden on his shoulders anymore as the eldest child in the family. And I have a very good champion for me in my death and dying time, and that's my husband. He knows what I want. He has lived through these 25 years with me of doing hospice. He has heard stories that were horrifying. We wouldn't do this to a dog. Why would we do this to another human being? And that's why I wrote my book. I consider it almost a personal trainer for death and dying. Because you've never done it before. How are you supposed to know how to do it? So I've taken the experiences from my patients, their families, my experience as a nurse and a caregiver, and put it together so that people can become educated and inspired and empowered. for their own end-of-life experience. That's my story.
Judy, people are so interested in this topic. Can you stay with us a little longer?
Sure.
They are sensing you as a very genuine person who really cares, but they also feel like we've left a part of this out. And I'm going to tell a story, and then you can add to it. And we are looking at your book on Amazon. 5 stars. And people loved your book. I was with my parents and my grandmother when she died. She she had had a heart attack. She was very peaceful. She said she could hear the music. The angels were there. Her dead children were there to meet her. Her parents, she told me what dress she wanted to be buried in. I mean, she was glowing.
Mm-hmm.
Would you talk about the spiritual side of this?
Well, when I give these speeches in churches, I very often bring that piece in because it was a very spiritual experience for me. I've sat with hundreds of dying people, and if they reached that time where they were comfortable and they were actually not groaning and moaning in pain or whatnot, very often they got visitors that would come and get them. I can remember sitting with patients in the middle of the night and them talking to their mother who had died years ago, or their sister or brother. They would say to me, "Don't you see them?" And I'd say, "No, but I'm sure you do. What are they saying?" "Well, they've come for me." And I would say, "Well, are you ready to go with them?" "Well, yeah." And I'd say, "Well, then just take their hand and go with them." I mean, that wasn't a shocker to me because I experienced it with these patients. But people have to be comfortable for this. When you're writhing in pain, you're not going to experience this. I was taking care of a woman for several months, and her son was taking care of her. And he was just a wonderful, wonderful caregiver. The only family there was her son. And I would sit and talk with him. His name was David also. And nurses, the whole hospice team, we take care of the patient's family as well as the patient, which is unlike other medical care. And I used to sit in the kitchen after I would take care of his mother, and David and I would have a cup of tea before I would leave. And he used to tell me stories about when he was a young boy, he was sure he gave his mother cancer, because he was a reckless, difficult teenager, and he had such a lot of guilt on his shoulders. And we would talk about that. And, you know, I would tell him about my David and how my David was a really rough kid to raise. But I said to him once, if I thought my David thought that he gave me cancer, and I've had cancer, if I thought that he gave that to me, oh, my goodness, my heart would be broken, because I loved him through all those hard times, and we've come out very good in our relationship. And so we had many, many talks. Well, I can remember I went to the home of this David and his mother, and she was in a semi-comatose state that day when I left. She was mostly gone, but every once in a while she would flicker her eyes or look up or whatnot. And when I left that day, I said to her, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if your mom were to die tonight. And you know all you have to do is call and have me paged, and I will come right here. So don't be afraid to call. You call if you're scared. You call if you need me to come and even sit with you. No, Judy, I'll be okay. So I went home, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. My pager went off, And the operator said, Judy, there's a young man on the phone. His name's David, and he wants to talk to you. So I just assumed that his mom had died. So I got on the phone, and I said, David, it's Judy. What's going on? He said, Judy, I just had to tell you this. Now, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. He said, my mom sat up in bed, and she opened her eyes, and she said, it's so beautiful. It is just so beautiful. And she said, Judy, she laid down and died. She's not breathing anymore. Now, whoa, what an experience. And, I got to his home, got her ready for the funeral home, sat with David, and he just couldn't get over it. He wasn't a religious person, but he was just enthralled with that whole experience, as I was. Just an amazing experience for both of us.
Why is there so much fear about death and dying?
Well, what have we always regarded death as being? The skull, and I don't even know the symbols, the different symbols for death, but they're not good. When do we ever talk about a joyous death or a, I was appalled because there's a movement going on, not just in the United States, but all over the world. It started in England. They're called death cafes. And people are meeting, there are hundreds of them, and they meet to talk about end of life. So the movement is, it's getting started. But I went on their website, and it's all these death symbols that we associate with horror. See, I don't associate death that way. We need to bring it out of the closet. It's in the closet. Nobody wants to talk about it. And yet when I give these speeches in my community, I get asked back 2 and 3 times to the same group. And it's like they want to know more. They want to know more. People are hungry for this information. We're all going to die. We've never done it before. How do we do it? What do we need to know? What does our family need to know?
I was reading
one of the biggest
to my mother.
Go ahead.
I was reading to my mother when she was dying, and I was reading her the bibliography or a story about a nun that had gone into the jungles and was the caretaker there for the whole tribe. And this reporter said, well, aren't you fearful that you're going to get sick and there's going to be nobody to take care of you and you might die? And she said, I believe that God's reward for living a life is death. That seemed to bring so much peace to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's God's reward for living a life. Because with my grandma, she described it as being beautiful and music and angels. But then I have two other parents who fought it every step of the way and were injected with morphine for days. Even though you think you don't have time, I think a book about the spiritual side of dying, which is what a lot of this is in your book, is such a beautiful thing to bring to the planet. There's so many people who are saying thank you, and some of them are reporting that they're crying.
Aww.
Your book is such a relief to them.
Well, one other thing I wanted to include is because people don't know what to say when they go to be with someone that is terminally ill. And I heard that so often. I don't know what to say. So I put a whole chapter in here. If you want to nurture a human spirit while that person is dying, what should you say that will nurture that spirit? And what shouldn't you say? Because it will deplete the spirit. So I did a whole chapter on that, on things you can say And I did a chapter on you have to balance the benefit versus the burden of those treatments. Because when the treatment becomes more of a burden and you're not able to live your life and there's no cure for your disease, you need to be able to balance that and say, when is enough enough? Most people don't know what enough is. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. I heard something in the phone, and I know my husband isn't on the other line, so I'm wondering if...
Have you watched the movie about the little boy who went to heaven and came back? And?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
What do you think about that?
Well, you know, that was part of... It's true. I experienced it with my patients. People that are in doubt, I experienced it. I was there. I saw it. But people had to be comfortable in order to be able to get into that experience. You can't be doing that and feeling that connection with God if you're writhing in pain or if you're sick all the time, if you're throwing up, if you're, you know, there's so many symptoms that go with end-of-life care. And we know how to manage those because we've seen it for all these years. We know what works, and we know what doesn't work.
Here's another one from the audience that says, my granddaughter begged my mother not to go and not to leave her. I think it prolonged my mother's agony. How can we teach our own children and ourselves to let go?
Oh, dear. One of the coaching skills that I used to use with my families, I would take a 3x5 card out of my nurse's bag, and I would write down things that were necessary to complete the relationship so that once those things were said, the relationship was more complete. And the last thing on that list, there were five things, the last thing on that list was goodbye. I'm going to be all right. I want you to know that. A dying person needs to know that their spouse or their children are going to be okay. You know, everybody needs to know that their life had meaning. So instead of spending that time, those final days, weeks, months, not facing what is happening and trying to keep that person going, 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 let them die in peace. Share with them experiences that maybe only the two of you could have experienced together, that were meaningful to you. Make sure the I love yous are said. Make sure the thank yous are said. Make sure you say, I forgive you for anything you ever did to me that has caused me pain, discomfort, whatever. I forgive you. And I need your forgiveness. In order to die peacefully, I would like your forgiveness. And the last thing, absolutely, goodbye, Mom. I'm going to miss you so much. But it's okay. It really is okay. And I'm going to be okay. I just want you to know that. And that's what I was able to do with my own mom. And I remember sitting with her and talking about things that happened when I grew up that only my mom and I shared together. And we sat and giggled, just like we were back then. And it meant so much to me, and it meant a lot to her, because I had never talked about that before. And my dad was a tyrant, and my mom was like an Annie Mame. And she and I used to get into all kinds of trouble with him. And I can remember, and I shared all those. I can remember her standing up in my room and throwing a bag, a brown paper bag, out the window, two stories to the front lawn when I was leaving for school with lipstick nylons in it because he wouldn't let me wear them. So she'd stand up there and throw those out the window for me so that I could catch the bus to school and put them on there. Just things like that that meant so much to me as a teenager. And I shared that with my mom. So put your focus and your energy into doing those types of things rather than using all your energy moaning and groaning about what's happening. It's going to happen. Life is terminal. Allow that person to die in peace. Don't make them go through treatments that aren't going to make them any better, that are going to destroy their spirit. Don't do that to them. Let them go in peace. And then you will be more peaceful because you did that. That was your last gift to your loved one. Do that for them. Don't be stuck in yourself. Do it for them. That's what I would say.
That's so wonderful. It's such a positive experience for the acceptance on both sides, especially for the loved ones that are having to, you know, release that person. But at the same time, as you say, doing it in a space of acceptance and love for each other rather than this fearless, fearful moment of pounding on the being and trying to resuscitate or do something or some sort of protocol, being in a space, and this is again why I'm such an advocate of hospice, is being in the space where you can be with the person and be in, you know, in that moment with them and in a more peaceful, relaxed, more, you know, space of being able to go. And being in that moment with them is so powerful. It's so, you know, I'm certain there are audience members that are crying over this.
Well, you know, I do. I tell a story in my book about this word. I don't know whether I coined this word or not, or whether I heard, I don't know, but it just was there with me. I call it presencing. And it's being there with them, in that moment with them, even though it might be devastating. You know, you're in there with them, and it allows them to let you see their brokenness, and it's okay to be in there with them instead of trying to fix it, because it can't be fixed. It goes beyond the words that you speak together. It's the feeling that they've opened that door for you to let you come in there with them and go through this experience together, so they don't have to go through it alone. They can live their life at the end of their life the way they want to. When you're losing your life, you're losing control of everything. And it's very important to let that person maintain as much control over that final time as they possibly can. I mean, their world becomes smaller and smaller, and they'll eventually be, you know, in a bed somewhere, in a room somewhere. So them opening that door and letting you be in there with them emotionally, I'm not talking physically, I'm talking emotionally, spiritually, is a great gift you can give someone. But sometimes it's uncomfortable. You have to be able to, you know, I became very comfortable with that. It just, I don't know whether it's in within me. I don't know. I really believe that hospice was where I belonged. I love hospice. And I love working with my patients and their families. The politics in the office weren't always that well, but I love taking care of my patients and their families. And it was so much better, Richard, than being in that hospital room pounding on that little 90-something-year-old's body.
Well, you're supposed to help other people do the same, and you can feel the love and the genuineness in your voice, and your book is going to help others through this.
I hope so.
You are a beautiful guest, but we do need to go. They're going to knock us off here in just a minute or so. Richard, do you have any last thoughts?
No, I think my thoughts would move toward, I have lots of thoughts, but I think we need to move toward how do people find your book? Are there places where people can hear some of your lectures, that kind of information? Do you have a website?
I have a website, www.spiritmattersauthor.com. And all the information is on there. The book is available on Amazon, barnesandnoble.com. It's available in an audio book. And, you know, I'm doing most of my speaking in the Florida area because the only time I charge for speaking is if I have to travel to cover my expenses. So it's all on the website, and I hope people will check it out. I hope people will read my book. It's not a big book. It's not gloom and doom. It's educational. And I really thank you for having me on your show.
It's been really wonderful to have you, Judy, and I would remind our listeners both at Blog Talk and at WebEx tell your friends to pass this show on to your friends at Facebook, to tell everyone to, you know, either it's available at iTunes. If you go to iTunes and search for Sherry Edwards, you'll find the shows, this show specifically. Or you can go to the website, Sound Health Options, afterwards, probably in a day or two. Usually Marie has this show posted up there, and you can see the WebEx feed of that. It's also available on players, on smartphones, on an application called Stitcher. If you go there and search for Sherry, that actually has a very nice platform. If you search for the show, for Sherry Edwards' name again, this show will show up, and you can spread it out in your social media world that way through Stitcher. But as many people hear about this as possible, because I think it is a conversation everybody has to have. And as Judy says, we're all going to die. I mean, really, there is no workaround. We're all
no.
going to die. There is no, like, there's no fix. There's no, like, oh, no, look, I didn't die. No, we're all going to die. And this is such
a
powerful subject.
I like
subject.
Alive. Did you hear me, Richard? Say
that again.
When people said, well, none of us are getting out alive.
That's right. It's so powerful. So I would just advocate for everybody listening or watching on WebEx to pass this show on to as many people as possible, because it's a conversation that people need to hear about, to understand that there are other alternatives like hospice, and that it's really a conversation that everybody needs to have. It's not a fun conversation. It's not a comfortable conversation, but it's a conversation we all need to have. It's really important. So those are my closing thoughts.
And this has been a very moving and beautiful show and a very genuine guest. And, Judy, we will certainly have you back again. Not many people can make our audience cry and be so heartfelt as you have done. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And I wish everyone out there in your audience and you too a wonderful, peaceful dying time.
Thank you so much, Judy.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks, everybody. Have a great weekend. Thank you, Sherry. You too. We'll talk again Tuesday. All right. Bye-bye.